Oh, I think he's on.
Oh, I'm sorry. We all set? Thanks. Mr. Alvarado?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear us okay? Okay, fine. This will be the fifth case of the day. This will be United States versus Edward Douglas. Mr. Alvarado.
But Mr. Alvarado, this is Judge Wood. I saw nothing in this, at least in the briefs before us, to suggest that you had any reason to believe that Mr. Williams was going to testify in a manner consistently with your theory of the defense. It didn't seem that Mr. Williams was about to say, actually, I did secrete the drugs someplace on my person, and I fooled the agents, and so on. You knew that he was going to testify in a manner consistently with what the officers said. And true, he was a transactional witness, and the district judge was trying to balance that. But it just seems overwhelmingly likely, especially on the kind of abuse of discretion standard of review that applies, that what you really wanted to do was get in this prior bad act evidence. And the rule is pretty clear that you can't do that. So why did you want him to testify?
I'm sorry?
Why did you want him to testify? The government was not going to put him on the stand.
That's correct, but you never know what happens until a person is on the stand. And when the court offered that opportunity for me to call him ahead of trial to see if he would provide any relevant testimony, of course I was going to take that opportunity, but...
But what did he say in that pretrial? He didn't say anything in that pretrial proceeding to make you think he was going to offer affirmative evidence favoring your client.
No, he didn't. In fact, he wouldn't even talk with me outside of the courtroom. We did attempt to talk with him, my investigator and I, before that pretrial hearing, and he refused that. I didn't expect him to say anything along those lines. However, when he did testify at trial, he did contradict himself from that pretrial testimony. During the pretrial testimony, he said that there were never any conversations between him and Mr. Douglas that weren't recorded by the police officers. And during trial, he admitted that that was not true, that there were calls that were made outside of the police presence, which would tend to support my argument.
This is Judge Williams. So you had that testimony before the jury, and then you had an opportunity to cross-examine those police officers as well, right, to bolster that argument. So the problem I'm having is how you're making a showing of prejudice if this was error, how you were prejudiced in terms of getting your defense before the jury.
With the traditional areas of cross-examination that any defense attorney would ordinarily be able to inquire about. For instance, the fact that the original Class X offense that he was charged with that led to his cooperation, I was not allowed to cross-examine him with the fact that that was dropped. He had never served a day in jail as a result of his cooperation, in spite of the fact that he had been a fugitive from justice on that case for over 6 years, and that the reason he was able to evade justice is because he provided a false name upon his arrest. In fact, he even provided false names when he did return to court. He even signed a bond refund to his own lawyer using a false name in that case. None of that inquiry because it could have at least given the jury an opportunity to see why Mr. Williams would want to curry favor with the prosecution. Whether or not he had an agreement in place, whether he expected a benefit, just the fact that he had a pending indictment with federal prosecutors would have been a basis to inquire.
But you could have, this is Judge Wood again, you could have solved that problem by not calling him, because by calling him, you did bolster the government's case to a certain degree. Now, he may have come up with the one inconsistency you mentioned, but on the whole and by and large, the reason that people like to introduce the kind of impeachment evidence you're talking about, currying favor with the government, is they get up there and they say things that are favorable to the government because the government's put them on.
Was so integral between the two people, we felt it was important that we present those two people. And in fact, Mr. Douglas testified and Mr. Williams testified. And we had to call them. It wasn't the ideal situation, but we felt it was important for the jury to hear the entire transaction from the horse's mouth. And we did it. But we were handcuffed to the extent that we could not fully cross-examine Mr. Williams about his entire life, not even getting into the fact of all his prior names that he had managed to come up with by bribing Secretary of State officials. Just the simple, traditional areas of cross-examination were prohibited. And I think that goes right to the very core of what the Sixth Amendment right to confront witnesses means. But aside from that, when the court ordered that Williams could be called only for, or it could only be impeached for inconsistencies, the basis of that was violated by the government during its investigation. When the court ordered this, the court said that only the conversation and Mr. Williams were admissible because Williams' statements placed the defendant's statements in context. The government clearly violated that during the course of its examination. One of the officers, when they asked the officer, was there anything significant or worse to that effect in a particular tape recording that was offered into evidence? And the officer said, well, yeah. There was a point at the end where Mr. Williams said, it's good stuff, right? Money back guaranteed. And there was no response from the defendant. In fact, Mr. Douglas testified that he didn't even hear it. And if the court were to look at the videotape and the audio tape together, they were not synchronized. So you couldn't actually see Mr. Williams' mouth moving when he sang those words. But if you look at the tapes, clearly, Mr. Douglas isn't even in view when Williams is saying those words. So when Williams said those things, he was basically testifying, and there was no way that we could fairly cross-examine those statements without getting into the entirety of Mr. Williams' background. Essentially, this was a non-testifying witness making testimonial statements in violation of Crawford. And we think that went right to the core of Sixth Amendment right to confront witnesses. So I don't know how the government can say that the government didn't deliberately elicit that statement, but even if it were inadvertent, the problem is still there. The statement of Mr. Williams was offered into evidence, and there was no evidence that the defendant even heard it, let alone that he was adopting it, either by silence or by some affirmative gesture or statement. Therefore, the government violated the court's order. Therefore, he should have been allowed to get into Mr. Williams' background, at least to the limited extent that we traditionally cross-examine him. That was really the core of violation of this case, and that is why Mr. Douglas should receive another trial based on this record. Your Honor, if you
have no further questions, I'd like to reserve my rebuttal time, and I would like to thank the court for allowing me to appear by phone.
Okay, your time expired, but because you don't have a light, I'll give you a minute for rebuttal. Mr. Cox?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Alvarado. I'm Richard Cox. I'm an assistant United States attorney in the Central District of Illinois, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. Mr. Alvarado has only argued one of the issues in his three-part brief, and so I will only comment on that one issue, and that has to do with the testimony or lack thereof in some cases of the informant, in this case Carl Williams. And I think Mr. Alvarado's argument in the court below and before this court is just simply based on a misunderstanding, misapprehension of the law. He continually says he had a right to traditionally impeach Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams did not testify for the government. This would be the normal case where you would ask questions: what kind of deals did you have with the government? What about this bank fraud case that's going on in Chicago? What about the use of all these alias names? To test his credibility in the eyes of the jury as to whether Mr. Williams' testimony was credible. That was not the case here. The government offered the tape recordings in this case. The statements made by the defendant, of course, came in as party opponent admissions. We offered Mr. Williams' statements only to put those statements in context. And I think it's highly relevant, Your Honors, that there was no dispute about what was said on these tape-recorded conversations, the telephone conversations. In fact, Mr. Douglas freely admitted during on direct examination and cross-examination that, in fact, yes, he set these deals up. Yes, he said those words. Yes, he agreed to sell an ounce of crack cocaine for $750. Yes, he agreed to sell 4.5 ounces of crack cocaine for $2,750. Yes, I did all of those things. He just says, when push came to shove and we actually met, I ripped him off. I never provided the crack cocaine. That was the only issue in the case. So Mr. Williams' testimony, certainly if it would have supported Mr. Douglas's theory that he ripped him off, may have been helpful. But as Judge Wood indicated earlier, and it was obviously clear in this case, there was no way that Mr. Williams, in this case, when I believe he was telling the truth, was going to support that theory. And Mr. Alvarado, in his pretrial matters, and Judge McCuskey, I think, bent over backwards to give Mr. Douglas and Mr. Alvarado the opportunity to show how any testimony from Mr. Williams would be helpful to Mr. Douglas. It simply didn't happen and wasn't going to happen. And even after, in the pretrial hearings that were conducted the day before trial, after 2 hours of testimony, Mr. Williams, despite not having talked to an agent, seen a police report, seen a videotape, heard an audio tape in well over 2 years, still had pretty good recollection and was certainly firm in his testimony that, in fact, he delivered on two occasions those quantities of crack cocaine to Mr. Douglas. And Mr. Alvarado then chose to call Mr. Williams during the trial, and Mr. Williams reiterated that same testimony. Yes, in fact, that's what I did. So I think in this case there certainly was no prejudice to Mr. Douglas. He was allowed to present his defense. The bottom line for him is he had no evidence to support it. If there's no further questions from the court, then I would ask you to affirm the judgment below. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Alvarado, I said I'd give you a minute for rebuttal if you need it. Okay, thanks. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement, and that completes the arguments for this morning. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.